This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hscc.org.
Somebody on Facebook. There's a, I guess you call it a page, for Soto Zen Buddhism. And mostly I avoid it like the plague, because quite a lot of wasted back and forth happening. But one thing caught my eye this week, and somebody said, what would Dogen think of the Me Too movement? Very odd question. Now, I didn't follow it up by reading all the thread, because it usually goes nowhere. I snickered at the question, but it did come back to my mind from time to time during the week. So we, of course, don't know what Dogen would think or say about anything. But it's pretty clear that he wouldn't have a great deal of tolerance for mistreating other people. I think that's pretty obvious. And in spite of what goes on in certain Japanese monasteries, training monasteries nowadays, where there's quite a bit of harsh treatment, there's no indication that in Dogen's community that was how things were done. Maybe some of you have seen the movie Zen. Have you seen it? I recommend it. It's not exactly all about Zen. It's a fictional treatment of Dogen's life. And some of it is very silly, but some of it's also entertaining and even stirring a bit. So I recommend it if you can find it. It's not likely to crop up on Netflix or anything. At least I don't think so. But if you get a chance, you might have a look at it. And there is one, if I remember right, there's one young monastic male, and then there's one young woman who is in the community. And again, we don't really know whether that's that was Dogen's arrangement, but it could have been, since he's very, very clear that he feels nothing but scorn for people who say that women are any less capable of awakening than men. So in the movie, there was a young woman and monastic, and a young man monastic who is very fond of her. And correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a scene where he's getting pretty close to forcing her to do something she would not want to do. Is that right? Any of you who've seen the movie?
Yeah, I've seen.
Yeah, okay. And I, as I recall, he catches himself at some point and realizes, what am I doing? And then he winds up leaving the community. And the departure is his idea. Dogen learns of the incident, but he does not seek to expel this young man. And in fact, I got the impression that he felt it would be better if this young man stayed in the community and continue to practice as a way of dealing with this aspect of his person, which almost caused a very serious problem. But anyway, he leaves nonetheless to go pursue his fate elsewhere. One thing that Dogen definitely did not do was to blame the woman, which is a phenomenon that is not unknown worldwide. It's somehow, if a woman gets assaulted, it's somehow her fault. But that did not happen. So I'm pretty sure if Dogen were in some situation where women or just people in general related having been assaulted or treated roughly, Dogen would have pretty much a zero tolerance policy and would require that anyone who was associated with him or in his community would undertake the practice of confession and repentance. It's a little different from confession that I knew growing up in the Catholic Church. It has to do with making a statement to at least one other Sangha member, and sometimes a group of Sangha members, that the person had made a misstep. That's the confession part. And the repentance part is, and I will not do that anymore. I will turn away from that behavior. That's the repentance part. And this was a prominent feature of monastic practice anyway in those days, and to some degree we have brought it into the West as a wholesome practice for ourselves. So periodically I will, if I feel I have been unskillful, I'll find another Sangha member and I will tell that person that such and such happened and that I will make every effort to turn away from that behavior. Usually it's nothing too awful, like sexual assault. It's more like, I don't know, having been bad-tempered or something, and maybe said something injurious to someone. I must say, I have found that practice of confession and repentance to be powerful and very much a part of the precept life of a Sangha. So I urge all of us to look into that practice and see if we can find a place for it in our lives. Of course, you all may have done so already, in which case, congratulations. Pardon me, this is not sake, unlike the late lamented Trungpa Rinpoche, who used to have a little beaker of sake on his lectern as he would give talks. But the blood pressure medicine I take makes my mouth extremely dry, so I sometimes have to wet my whistle, as it were. Also, I'm sorry for all of the racket. I'm in touch with the foreman of the project over here, and he has asked, as I requested, that they not do anything noisy between 9:30 and 11. But it appears that today there is some urgency, so they went right ahead. And this added an interesting element to our sitting practice, I'm sure. this was the perfect opportunity for me to watch the arising of the flip side of attachment, that is rejecting what is unpleasant. I could watch my mind, my psyche, as the noise grew louder and more insistent, the psychic tendency to try to push it away or get rid of it or want it to be gone, etc. And this kind of inspection of our own inner process is also zazen, particularly to the degree that we're really not trying to make something different happen, but we're noticing that very intimate process where almost always in our minds there is either the power of attachment, of moving towards what's desirable, or rejection, pulling away from what is undesirable. And watching that process is the powerful way of studying the self, which is, you could say, our major work, to study the self in all of its activities and manifestations. So during Zazen, I said something like, resistance takes energy. So I could tell as I was listening to the racket that I was kind of marshaling resistance, as though I could somehow push it further away by just sitting here on my cushion. And of course, that did not happen. But then I could also have the experience of releasing that energy and finding that the space full of racket and activity and noise was just the space of Zazen as it was, without any need to modify. And even a little bit of exposure to that kind of practice creates a highly beneficial karmic current for us. So even if you only occurs it to you to make an effort in that way, like 1 minute out of 40, it's extremely important to make that effort and to see the results. In our weekly study hour, we are just started Dogen's very beautiful essay called Radiant Light. And in that essay, light is something like a metaphor for everything that exists. Just as though in a dark room, the room could be full of all kinds of things, but if it's not illuminated, you won't see anything. So the same could be said of our world, which is full of objects and people. But if our own light does not illuminate them, we will not see anything. So what we take for granted as ordinary, day-to-day, moment-by-moment perception is actually is the unfolding of a profound mystery. We haven't yet gotten to this story of Master Yunmen telling his assembly, everyone has a light. says, if you go looking for it, you can't see it. And then he asks everybody, what is everybody's light? And then he says simply, it's the monastery gate, the pantry, the monk's hall, and so forth. In other words, everybody's light is the world. So while in our lineage we don't assign topics for meditative scrutiny, it is possible to take a story such as that one, and as you move through your day, reflect on what is everybody's light. Is it the 24 muni bus? Is it the pizza place on the corner? Is it the crazy person screaming on Castro Street? And in fact, that is everybody's light. So we're not accustomed to considering this body mind as light. We think of it as, what does Shakespeare say? It's this too solid flesh. That's what it is. And to hear that this too solid flesh is actually light would be shocking to most people. Maybe not to you guys. And it is that light that illuminates the world and one another. When you meet someone, you are each borrowing the light from the other and being illuminated. So in your sitting practice, or maybe you have some other practice that you like, if you allow the stillness that is in all of us to come forward without, trying to make that happen, the notion that this is light may gradually come to make a certain kind of sense to you. So in Dogen's essay, part of the story involves some people in the imperial court, and they are pretty clear that, as far as they're concerned, light is either, is either white or yellow or red or green or something. But there's one courtier who's present who realizes that may be so, but that's not the Buddha light. The Buddha light can't be seen in that way. The Buddha light is seen in what arises as the world. And for that reason, when you go looking for something other than the world as light, you can't see it. Yunnan says, it's dark and dim. But once you begin to practice with world as light, body-mind as light, your perception of things will begin to shift. And you may see that birth and death is light. That death does not equal the end of existence. For that to be so, there would have to be an entity, a separate sovereign entity that could be extinguished. But there isn't any such critter. So these sorts of, I don't know, insights or teachings or recognitions or something, they unveil a world where mistreating others becomes utterly repugnant. And maybe sometimes it might happen by accident. And when it does, this cradle of light becomes the perfect place for confession and repentance. Oh, I'm sorry I mistreated you, or I was rude to you, or something, or I stole your wallet and went to the ice cream store, or something like that. But with world as light, a great deal of what is undesirable and unwholesome about our human activity is revealed as undesirable and unwholesome. So that means if if everybody were to become familiar with everybody's light, the world would change in an instant. So whatever we can do to facilitate that, pretty worthwhile, although it's best to remember that you can't make that happen for someone else. You can, however, make that a practice that you bear with you into the world. And you let that practice do the work with respect to other people. Yeah. probably, if you wander around town asking have you encountered everybody's light recently? You may not get very far. But, you know, you can try that if you want. I'd be interested to hear how that turns out. So, even this hideous racket, or at least it's hideous to me, is everybody's light. Which is quite wonderful. I imagine if Dogen were among us and were introduced to me too, he would want to meet some of those folks who were ill-used. And I imagine him bowing to them and apologizing for what happened, and seeing if he could care for them in some way. But right now, anyway, to paraphrase, the words of my first grade teacher, Sister Mary Charlene, I shouldn't put it quite this way. Dogen has no hands but ours. So we do what we can. I guess my talk is done. So, if you have any questions, please.
A while back, I saw something on TV on 60 Minutes, PBS NewsHour, one of those shows like that, and it was about these two men, and this one fellow had was a skinhead Nazi type person, and he had severely beat a gay man almost to the point of death, and he was found out and imprisoned, and he did his time, and then at some point later on, I don't know the circumstances exactly, but their paths crossed again. And somewhere in the process of either before that second meeting or during the second meeting, the perpetrator had seen the error of his ways, and the victim had found forgiveness in his heart for the perpetrator. And so they linked arms, so to speak, and went out on kind of a lecture circuit, speaking to high school kids and all sorts of groups about abuse and hatred and forgiveness and just all different topics around what happened.
Yeah.
And it was so encouraging. You know, we can only hope that something along those lines will happen again in these various situations that are arising currently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you can also make forgiveness into a practice rather than a, I don't know, a sort of state of mind that you have to wait for. You can actually extend forgiveness, the mind of forgiveness, to someone. And if in the next moment it's not there anymore, well, it's okay. When it was there, it was valid. When my ex kicked me out of our shared household, I wasn't feeling very forgiving at that time. But shortly thereafter, I was able to extend forgiveness. And in so doing, I realized I would probably have to do that for a while. Not just once, but many times. And, well, it worked. Finally, it, so to speak, it stuck. What is everybody's light? Maybe cookies and tea. Thank you very much.